How is that? Okay. Okay. Well, it's a great pleasure to be here, even though this is one of these rare non-sunny Southern California days. What I'd like to talk about today are mainly charge correlations and phase separation, and particular limits on phase separation within strongly correlated models in 2D. And I'm going to present data on the TJ model, though I suspect some of these results are a little more general than that. This is work that has been done in collaboration with two people mainly. Marco Lucchini has been my collaborator for many years on this work. And the second part on the charge correlations has also been done in collaboration with Rajiv Singh. Okay, let me just start off by mentioning what the TJ model is, just in case there's someone who hasn't seen this in the past. I think that's probably not too likely, but just in case. The TJ model is this Hamiltonian. There are two terms. There's a hopping piece and a Heisenberg spin interaction piece. And the model obviously gets its names from the two coupling constants that you write in front of these terms, T and J. What makes this model difficult to handle are the fact that you take the states you would have for a normal tight binding band, and you throw away all the doubly occupied states, or states that have doubly occupied sites. And that's what these projection operators do. And this is a very non-perturbative sort of step, and it makes doing calculations for the TJ model very difficult.
Has it been studied without that projection operator?
I'm not really sure. I mean, if you leave the projection operator out, then you have just the tight binding band. And that would just be putting a spin interaction in a tight binding model. I don't know if anyone's done that.
There's a reason to have treated by Caparezza of the one dimension.
Is it substantially different?
Yes, it's surprising, actually. Very surprising, the composition.
It should give, not exactly a small gear, no? If I must say
I mean, one thing is, I mean, yeah, for underferromagnetic coupling, there is a dimerize. The dimerization is the predominant correlation. And for ferromagnetic coupling, actually, when you introduce a planar anisotropy, it turns out to get triplet superconductivity.
But should we do then on-site U if you allow for
well,
states?
Without and with on-site U is similar. So if you have weak coupling theory for both U and J, it's universal, more or less.
But when we say there are also quite a number of bad papers with results are not aware of these.
With what?
Not aware of.
Oh, well, in the TJ model, I think you have to have the P's if you're going to talk about the TJ model. They do make life difficult, though. That is certainly true. The motivation for this model, just in case anybody is aware of that, is, of course, high-temperature superconductivity. I'm not going to go into the background on that. That's a story all unto itself. Okay, so this is the Hamiltonian that I'm going to talk about. The calculational technique that I'm going to use is high-temperature series. I don't want to go into a long discussion of this because it also is a talk all by itself. I would like to point out that there are a number of experts in the audience in addition to myself. Rajiv certainly is, and Chris Hamer, and Hartmut Munyan. Here. So there are plenty of people if you want to ask about these series expansion techniques. I also would be very happy to talk to anybody about them if they want to know more.
Bill, one question.
Yes.
Is this equivalent to the large U Hubbard model on the glasses?
Very large U.
Very large.
Exactly how the equivalence goes outside of perturbation theory, how the equivalence would go is not so clear. But presumably, qualitatively, very large U and small J are the same. Whether they're exactly the same quantitatively.
Except the lid does affect the fermion to the depth.
Yeah, there are differences, certainly. But hopefully, qualitatively, they're the same. that's a point that I don't have any data on, so I'm not going to.
This model is more physical.
That gets into philosophy almost. George Sawatsky would be a good person to talk to about that. Do you have a strong opinion on this as to which one's more physical? Hubbard or TJ? Yes.
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to explain.
Yeah.
Obviously, but Hubbard, and even Hubbard is not all that physical once you realize that it's actually a charge transfer gap system.
Sure.
So I would say that if you think Hubbard is better, then you should do the full pre-band Hubbard, and not the because the charge transfer gap is one of the smaller parameters. It's of order 3 electron volts or so, whereas the bare Hubbard U on copper is about 7 or 8 electron volts.
Depending on the system. We are not thinking specifically on copper 8 if you're looking at, say, vanadium.
Well, if you look at vanadium compounds, then of course, you have to do Hubbard, because there the U's are relatively small, but transfer energies are big. So I don't think U's DJ would have advantage.
He didn't say what system he wanted to study.
Just define
cuprates. Cuprates. Only cuprates.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to take the opinion that I'm just going to look at the model. I'm going to say extremely little about experimental data here because, quite frankly, we know very little about this model. And I think it's somewhat premature to be comparing guesses about the model to experimental data until we really have the model firmly under control. And then we can see whether it's relevant or not. So take this as a model calculation for the time being.
When you say identical series for this C dagger C, that's done for any IJ or?
Oh, you mean this right here?
What is actually?
Okay. What is calculated? If you were looking at a correlation function in the series expansions, what is calculated is a standard quantity. For instance, something like this. This would be a standard two-point correlation function, where what you expand is the e to the minus beta h. Now, it's not quite as simple as just simply doing expansion of the exponential. This is really quite a misleading way to write this. If you just were to do a simple expansion of the exponential, you'd see you did a tremendous amount of work that eventually got thrown away. And what one wants to do is reorganize the calculation so that you don't do that work in the first place. That reorganization changes this expansion into what's known as a cluster expansion. And that's the stuff that I don't want to go into too much detail here, because that really is a separate talk. It's Sen's accumulant expansion, exactly. That's essentially the motivation behind it.
I guess Arnold's question was due to arbitrary IJ.
Excuse me?
Arbitrary distance between I and J?
No, it's not quite as arbitrary as that. I mean, what terms we're keeping are terms in beta up to a certain power. That's our deciding criterion for which terms we keep. And if I were to pull these operators too far apart, I don't get a contribution. Right, right. Yeah, it's the power in beta is determining which terms we keep. Okay. So the issue that I'd like to look at first is phase separation in this model. And just to make sure everyone understands what I'm talking about, let me just discuss this in general for a few minutes. The idea of phase separation here is whether or not the system has a uniform density of holes or electrons, whichever we want to look at it. So this would be a non-phase separated state. And if we were thinking of, say, a fluid in a container, this would be having the fluid above its critical point. Right? So you're not going through any kind of phase transition at this point. If we were below the critical point, then the fluid would have a tendency to separate into a high density and low density phase. And this is the phase separation that I'm talking about. These two phases occupy different physical regions. In the TJ model, it will be different densities of electrons on different parts of the lattice. Okay. So the question for phase separation in the TJ model then is, if we pick a given set of model parameters, say the ratio of the coupling constants and electron density, is there a critical point? do we have a critical point for phase separation for that set of parameters? And what one wants to do then is vary the parameters and see which sets of parameters give you phase separation. This has turned out to be a surprisingly contentious issue in 2D. In 1D, let me just say that it's under control. I don't think there's any debate about 1D. Phase separation exists at large J over T in 1D, and there isn't any question about that. 2D is a much more difficult problem. This is kind of a generic phase diagram for the TJ model. The two parameters we have are the electron density and the ratio of coupling constants, J over T. If we get to a very large value of J over T, the system phase separates. That everyone agrees upon that's looked at this problem. And we know what the critical value for J over T for complete phase separation into an empty lattice and a fully occupied lattice is. This has been determined very accurately by Steve Helberg and Stratos Monosakis, and it's 3.4367 as you go to zero electron density. That's well determined. The big question is what happens as you approach half filling. As the electron density approaches one electron per site, where does this line go? Why this is interesting is because where we would really like to understand this model is kind of this red hatched area over here. These are the physical, roughly the physical region for the TJ model, for the cuprates. So does this phase separation line intercept that region, or does it stay well away from that region?
It's the zero temperature.
Excuse me?
The zero temperature.
Yes, this would be the zero temperature phase diagram.
It's actually half filling. It shouldn't phase separate either, for any value.
Well, it becomes kind of a degenerate question there, because in the TJ model, if you're at half filling, every site's occupied and nothing happens. Right, right. You only have the spins left, so. Yeah, it's really, how does this go as you approach half filling? That's the question. And this issue has received a number of different answers over the years. This was a list I made a couple years ago. I don't know if it's complete anymore, but certainly the initial papers are the same. The first major paper on this issue was by Vic Emery, Steve Kittleson, and their postdoc, Hong Lin, and this was in 1990.
Aichi Lin?
Did that? Okay. Wrong Lin, I think. And they said that, okay, the phase separation line goes all the way down to J over T equals zero. So that means that it would come in somewhere down here. And it would definitely go through the physical parameter region.
In other words, you have two holes in the system and they want to stick together.
Right? Well, this would be finite density. We're talking about a finite density of holes. But
right, but if you, okay.
The limiting case would... it's a little trickier than that. You really need, I think, to look at four holes to discuss phase separation, because two holes can form bound states that aren't phase separated. It's a
TJ, they do.
Yeah, depending upon J over T. Yeah, they do. A couple years later, we addressed this problem with series expansions, and we found that the critical value was 1.2 J over T. So that puts us up here somewhere. And it keeps phase separation outside of the physical parameter space. Since then, there wasn't much that happened then for a few years, and then in 97, Steve Helberg and Stratos Monosakis revisited this problem by a Green's function Monte Carlo technique, and they found again J over T is zero. A Japanese student, Kono, using also Green's function Monte Carlo, found 0.75. T.K. Lee and his collaborators, about the same time, using Green's function Monte Carlo, found 0.6. And a more recent Green's function Monte Carlo calculation by Sandro Sorella and his collaborators found 0.5.
Can you tell us about what Green's function Monte Carlo means?
I'm not an expert on this. It's a numerical technique where you essentially take a trial state and apply powers of the Hamiltonian to project out the ground state. It has the sign problem. That's one difficulty. These different Green's function Monte Carlo techniques use slightly different approaches depending upon the details. I think this last one uses something called fixed node Monte Carlo, where they take a wave function and they fix the nodes and then apply these powers of Hamiltonian. I think these others don't do that. The advantage of using fixed nodes, I think, is that they can go to larger lattices, larger clusters, apply more powers of the Hamiltonian. These guys would be restricted to smaller clusters, but they don't have this artificial constraint.
Can this technique be considered to be bound? Because you say you use a trial wave function.
I believe if you use fixed node with a trial wave function, you have a variational state. So it should give an upper bound to the ground state energy.
But is that how to read the
data
being 0.5?
I think Sandra would claim that their data is better than that. I will come back to this issue towards the end of the talk. I think that there's some finite size effects going on here. That's my opinion.
Does the bound on the energy mean the bound on J over T?
Not directly. It's that you have to follow the argument through a couple more steps before you get a bound on phase separation.
That's not if you have a variational state that shows phase separation. You can always imagine that you can find a lower energy state that do not show phase separation, so it doesn't imply any bound on J or T.
That's true, and I'll actually show some data like that. The question is on what the ground state energy is from these techniques. That's really what they're calculating, is ground state energy.
And it's on the ground state energy, but not on the position of the phase separation at all.
I would say that's in general true.
Unless you had that low energy, then...
No, unless you had an idea of what the uniform state was and you knew the energy of the uniform state.
How does phase separation show up in the ground state wave function that they have?
Just give me a couple seconds and I'll talk, discuss that. Yes.
All these people look like they do profile density. So they find some density, they find density region where the phase separate.
Right.
They separate in low density and high density.
Right.
These are also parameters. Are these parameters comparable in these calculations?
You mean for a fixed value J over T, at which value of density they have?
Right, a critical value of J over T.
Right.
What would be a critical density? And
okay.
It's the same, whether it separates to specific parapharmal density or maybe just very tiny. Let the case is a little bit
would be nice. Raise the temperature. Well, let me just point out what the phase separation is into. In all of these cases, the phase separation line has roughly this slope. So the phase separation is between a region of the lattice that's fully occupied and some lower density, some critical lower density down here. What this value is, where the phase separation line ends, would be where those two densities come together at half filling. Okay, so that would be the termination point as they approach half filling. Now, I can't really defend the Green's function Monte Carlo guys because I don't do that sort of calculation. What I can say is that we've come back and revisited this issue, and I will add 1999 to my value. I still say it's at 1.2. So I've given away the punchline already. Now I'm going to try and justify it.
Can you say something? For those that for phase state zero, mm-hmm. How does this line approach these calculations?
There are some estimates that it comes in. There are some estimates that it would come in roughly as a square root of J over T. So it would tend to drop down and do something like that. Yeah. So at rather small values of J over T, you have a substantial range of densities over which the system is supposed to be phase separated. And I disagree with this, so I'm not going to defend it.
Yes. The scale here.
Yes.
One is half filling. Is that right?
Yes, this is half filling.
That's the maximum.
Right. TJ model, you can only have one electron per site. This is totally empty. And N will always be electron density. I will use delta also, and that will be the hole density. So that's 1 minus N.
Maybe you said this already. What's the physics of the case separation where everybody agrees with this?
Oh, it's just that you've cranked J up to be a very large value, and you've glued the electrons together, opposite spins. Right? That's all that's happened.
They form pairs.
Well, no, I mean, they form a huge, they just form a blob.
But the holes go to the surface.
Yeah, the holes get kicked out, and you have a blob of electrons. It's no more than that. And because we know that that must happen at very large J over T, everyone agrees up at large J over T that the model is phase separated.
What's known about magnetic correlation is the region when it's phase separated? What are magnetic correlations in one and another?
I would say very little is known.
Well, probably because
they're perfect.
In the one region, they must be Heisenberg antiferromagnet.
Does it really specify into Heisenberg antiferromagnet sphere or what?
What the other phase is not known.
Not known.
That's, I would say, not known. It's a lower density phase, but it's whether the spins do something in that phase.
Really, does not phase separate into a full electron state and a totally empty state.
Only above this value. For larger than this, it's 0 and 1 for the densities. For this region in here, it's 1 and some intermediate density.
That's exactly 1. 1 is always fine.
Yeah, 1 is always there. If you were looking at the one-dimensional model, the slope of this line would be the opposite direction. And then the two phases would be 0 and some intermediate density. It depends upon the slope of this line as to which way it goes. It's the energetics of whether you diffuse holes into the fully occupied state when you get rid of phase separation, or whether you boil pairs off the fully occupied region. It's the details of the energetics.
These numerical people should be able to tell whether this another state is magnetic or not.
I don't think they've looked. I mean, sure. I mean, you can look at the spin-spin correlations. But I just don't, I'm not aware of any. Yeah, I'm not aware that they've done that. Yeah. The most. The most recent version of this calculation. The most recent version of this calculation by Sandro Sorel and his collaborators, they present ground state energy data and density-density correlations. But I don't think they present any spin-spin correlations.
Can you do it in your
own? We can look at correlation functions, and I'll show some density-density correlation. We can calculate that too, but it's, I don't have the data with me today, so I won't be able to show that. But, okay. Yes. So, how do we look for phase separation? A quantity that was introduced in the very first paper I mentioned by Emery Kivelson and Lin is this quantity that they call little e of delta. And what this is the slope of a chord in the ground state energy. If I were looking at different densities of holes, say two different dopings, what I would do is look at the slope of this chord. And if I saw that as I increased the doping, the slope of this chord, they're both negative here. And if the slope of this chord grows, so if it's negative, that means it becomes smaller in magnitude. That means that the uniform state is stable. Okay? If it goes the other way, so the slope of the chord either stays the same or gets large, more negative, it decreases in value, then the uniform phase is not stable and the system phase separates. Okay. What we calculate, because we're starting, remember, at infinite temperature with our high temperature series, we're going to generalize this quantity to the free energies. In the work by Emery Kivelson and Lin, they would put the ground state energies in here. And I will just calculate this quantity, free energy at a fixed doping minus the free energy of the antiferromagnet divided by the doping. And in particular, the limit of this obviously is going to be the same as what Emery Kivelson and Lin calculated. What I'm going to calculate, though, is not directly this quantity, because this is also opening up a huge can of worms, but the high-temperature series are Taylor expansions, and they only have a finite radius of convergence. So you have to do something to approximately analytically continue them beyond this finite range of radius of convergence. And how that...
You didn't know that the radius occurs at finite temperature?
Well, this is something that you observe empirically. You observe singularities when you try to, if you just tried to add up the coefficients, you'd see that they don't converge at arbitrarily large values of beta.
That may be an artifact of the analysis method.
I don't think so.
Would imply phase transition at finite temperature.
Only if it's on the real axis. These could be singularities off in the complex plane somewhere.
And there are three
when you expect the phase separation transition would occur at finite temperature.
I expect it does, yes.
So
and I'll show some data on that if I have time. but in general, the problem is that the singularities in the complex plane lie much closer to the origin than what you really want to reach. And to get around this, well, the standard technique of doing the analytic continuation is Padé approximates.
Yeah, and then you use Euler transforms.
Well, there's a number of ways to try and get rid of the singularities. I agree. What I'm going to do is try to find a new quantity that gives me a weaker temperature dependence, and that means I've moved the singularities farther away. If the singularities are close to the real axis, I'll have bumps and wiggles in my function. So if I move the away, then I have a smoother temperature dependence, and that means the Padé should do a better job if they're not near singularities.
Okay. I'm turning to Ayn's question. If you do really expect phase temperature separation at finite temperature, then you do expect the singularity of the real axis, don't you?
Yes, and well, it depends upon whether you expect it for a given set of parameters.
I mean, it wouldn't be an actual level cross, so you may not get singularity. You're looking for the sort of concave energy.
Well, we're getting ahead of the story. I'll come back to this point in a little bit.
Is this equivalent to Maxwell construction?
Yes. This quantity, little e of delta, is equivalent to Maxwell construction. Right. The quantity I'm going to look at is not directly this little f or little e. It's going to be a ratio. I'm going to calculate ratios at slightly different densities. And my reason for doing this is that these ratios of the Fs extrapolate better when I apply the Padé approximants to them. They're weaker functions of temperature so that they extrapolate. And using this, I can actually try to estimate from the Fs the zero temperature little e ratios. And if these things behave correctly, if these ratios are less than one, which is what I would... I'm going to look at parameters where these little e's would always be negative. So if this ratio is less than 1, the uniform phase is stable, and then I don't expect to see a TC. Okay? If the ratio gets bigger than 1, then I would expect to see that the uniform phase is unstable, and I'd most likely have gone too far in my extrapolations and actually extrapolated through a TC somewhere.
Is that really convincing? Let's look at this curve, the blue curve,
this guy,
which starts with a large slope and then goes to the minimum and has a vigor. Don't you get Emery?
Well, it will be... What I should see is if I plot this ratio, I'm going to pick E of 0.01 just to normalize things eventually. What I should see is a monotonic behavior. If I saw something where there was a bump like that, that would imply phase separation somewhere in this region. Okay? These ratios have to be monotonic. Each... Well, I will look at a range of dopings, but what I'll see... Well, let me just put the data up, then we can see what it looks like. This is what comes out. The curves are monotonic, at least for the range of parameters I've got here. What these different curves are different values of j over t. Starting at j over t of 0, 0.2, 0.4, 0.6, 0.8, 1, 1.1, and 1.2. And what I say from this data is that there is no sign of phase separation here, because the curves are nice and monotonic.
What about these error bars?
The error bars are my estimates. Remember, these are extrapolating down to t equals zero. So I've pushed the PDAs as far as I can go.
And have a
no, but I can still make an estimate of the error just from how the PDAs behave. I look at different PDAs. And if they're well converged, the error is going, I would say, is small. If they're having a tendency to not really give me the same value, then I would say the error is larger. I do try to be rather conservative on these error bars. You'll notice that when we get over here, the error bars are really getting quite large.
This I understand. I mean, the criterion set is not just to ratio if you large or small than unity, but the root of the ratio.
Well, it's, you should see monotonic behavior. Yeah. Yes.
With your score for 1.1, is one point before the last one.
This.
Yeah. If you have this concentration, couldn't the space separate into two different spaces?
Oh, not given the error bars. Yeah, well, the line just connects the data points, but I would say not given the error bars. The error bars are quite large here.
Is there any independent proof that one of the phase should be at N1?
Oh, the other thing, remember, the one of the phases that we have always in the phase-separated state is the fully occupied phase.
Is there any independent proof that it should be the case?
Independent.
Oh, we know it's only one. Maybe it's like what like your call 1.1.
I'm not aware of any independent proof of that, no.
Then it's not excluded. And suppose but that this curve is right.
Well,
forget about the error bar. Then you would have phase separation between two phases is not full occupation.
But you've got to tell me what physics would be causing that. The physics that's causing the phase separation we have that I'm talking about is driven by the J term.
Yeah, but it's not entirely obvious to me that this
physics
can manifest itself slightly more complicated,
right? I think it's
not obvious to this one. Is there a simple argument for that, or?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as soon as you, it's you haven't gained energy if the host flows out, you gain energy as long as the host flows out.
Okay, well, I would agree with you that that's what the phase separation is going to be, but whether we know that from independent principles, well, I don't think that's the case, but I'm not aware of a ironclad statement I can give you on it.
At the beginning, your curve is always negative, but it doesn't tell us that the situation like 1.1 curve is excluded. Don't you think so?
Well, there are other models where independent you can find a range of densities which is kind of at a funny location where you have phase separation. There's a model that was examined recently by Jim Friedrichs, the Holstein model and something else, where he finds a range of densities where he has phase separation, and that's not at a particular density. But that, I think, comes out of the specific physics of that model. If you start looking at it, there's he has an energy level in his model that pins the chemical potential for a certain range of densities. And those densities are where he sees phase separation. In the TJ model, we don't really have that, so I don't see.
So if I'm going to entertain that possibility, your curve at point 8 looks like it might have a slight
very, very difficult to tell from this data.
It's a stupid question. How can a zero temperature result be obtained from a high temperature experiment?
I can estimate something, provided I don't cross a phase boundary. If I cross a phase boundary, I know that the functional form of a thermodynamic function changes, and I only have information on the high temperature side. If I don't cross a phase boundary, though, the functional form I would expect would just continue smoothly, anyways. I'll come back to this when I look at larger values of J over T. We'll have to worry about that there. I don't think that we have to worry about phase separation at these values of J over T. That's my opinion. Okay. It's a series expansion to. Okay, well, the free energy is done in a very similar way, except for instead of having a ratio of two traces, I would have the log of a trace. I mean, it's, all of these things are calculated in standard thermodynamic functions. No, the correlation functions are a little more general, that's all. Okay, so what I've shown so far, let me tell you what I've been looking at. I've been looking only at a very specific range of parameters. I've been looking at dopings that are near half filling, and I've been looking at J over T values where the ground state energy, if I were to plot it as a function of electron filling, would have this sort of behavior. It would go through a minimum at some larger doping and then increase. And I've been looking always at this area right here. My reason for doing that is that if I tried to look where, if I increase J over T further, this curve will eventually go down. The minimum will be at half filling. If I try to look at those values or try to look over here somewhere, I get a very spurious problem in the thing I've been calculating. The free energies will have a tendency to cross at some non-zero temperature. And this is nothing special. I mean, there isn't anything great about this, except for it causes problems in extrapolating these ratios. I get a pole in the ratio I've been calculating, and the Padays try to map out this pole very accurately, but then they lose accuracy at lower temperatures. And as a consequence, I haven't looked at data where this happens, where the free energies cross. And that's why I've restricted myself to where the ground state energy does something like this. In this region, the free energies don't cross. They just go down monotonically. Okay, and the reason that these curves decrease as I increase J over T is simply that this minimum in the energy is moving up towards half filling as I increase J over T. So that's all that's going on. There isn't a real profound reason for that either. To look at larger values of J over T, I need to do something else. And I'll come to that in just a little bit. Actually, let me go to it right now. Okay, so what I've shown so far is a region of the phase diagram where I don't think we have phase separation. So what do we find if we go into a region of the phase diagram where we do have phase separation? What would we expect to see there? Well, one quantity that one you could look at would be the pressure as a function of electron concentration. Zero is empty lattice, one is half filling again. And I could imagine looking at the pressure at different temperatures. And as I cooled the system down, eventually I would hit some critical point, and the pressure at this point would have a slope of zero, and that would be the compressibility diverging. Okay, this would be a very nice way to look for phase separation. I don't have data with me directly on the pressure. What I'm going to look at is a slightly different quantity. If we did have a phase separated ground state, there are some things we know about it. One thing we know is that the ground state energy would be linear in doping in this region, because all that the ground state energy would be doing is interpolating between the two endpoints. So it would just be a linear function. That would imply that the chemical potential is constant in the ground state, or the pressure would be constant, like I've drawn it here. You could also find these by a Maxwell construction. That would be the standard way to do it. What I'm going to look at in the large J region is the chemical potential, but I'm not going to be at zero temperature. I'm going to sit at the smallest temperature I can reasonably reach, but I'm going to stay above zero temperature. And what I'm going to be looking for is not so much mu constant, but mu becoming very flat. That's what I'm going to be looking for. Okay, so what do we see? this is, well, first of all, let me say why I don't use this technique at smaller values of J over T. The error bars on the chemical potential are pretty substantial. And to defend whether or not it's flat or not in a very small range of doping would be very difficult. So this is not the most sensitive thing to use at small J over T. At large J over T, however, it shows rather nicely that the chemical potential becomes quite flat. And that's these values up here. I would say that there's a big change that happens right about at between 1.3 and 1.2 for J over T.
So what is delta?
Delta is the whole doping. It's 1 minus the electron occupation.
What is the speed
cell? Again, this is now at a fixed temperature, 0.2 of T, so it's fairly high temperature. And these are my estimates of how well I can determine the chemical potential. These are much bigger error bars than what I've shown before in the previous plots. The chemical potential is a harder quantity to calculate.
Does the Greek function Monte Carlo method or the Hilbert-Hamilton theory have given any indication of what the transition temperature would be?
I think in the infinite J over T limit, they might. The Emery-Kilson analysis. Well, it's interesting in one sense that you know it's phase separated there, and there's some things you can do there to analyze this. I'll say a little bit more about what TC is in just a minute. What I'd like to point out about the chemical potential is that it gives you a nice way of thinking about what's going on with phase separation in these models. If I make J over T larger than this value of 3.43 that I mentioned earlier, what happens is that the chemical potential drops out of the bottom of the band, and it's basically constant for all dopings. As I make J over T smaller than that, and you can actually, you know what the value of the chemical potential is in the ground state in that case. And as soon as you just have phase separation between 0 and 1, you know the ground state energy exactly, and you know the chemical potential because it's just the slope of that energy. When the chemical potential enters the band, then the kinetic energy starts limiting the range of dopings at which you have phase separation. And it's the interaction of the kinetic energy with the tendency of the electrons to glue themselves together with the spin-spin interaction that is competing. As I decrease J over T, the kinetic energy effect is getting larger. And as a result, the range of doping in which phase separation exists decreases. You can clearly see that up here, the range where this is going flat is much smaller than it is down here. And that's going from a J over T of 1.3 to 2. So it becomes a detailed problem of how these two things compete with each other as to where you have phase separation now. So it's not something that you can address really on general principles and just say that phase separation either is there or isn't there. And you have to really go in and calculate the numbers. What I would say is that phase separation ends somewhere between these two curves, between 1.3 and 1.2. And that
variation of temperature T,
right. That's a question I can't really answer. If I could go to lower temperatures, I would.
At higher
temperatures, the system, well, strictly speaking, if I make the temperature high enough, the system isn't phase separated for any value of J over T. Temperature 0.3? Yeah, well, these curves won't change too much, especially up here where it's very flat. What would happen is that as I raise the temperature, this would start developing an upward tail at small hole doping.
Well, I guess, but one thing to worry could be that if the Emery-Kilson theory says somehow that the Nagaoka mechanism is important in driving the transition, it could be that the transition temperature is just exponentially small as you go close to half filling.
Yeah,
and
well, that
would be inaccessible by this method.
So that's
something happens at extremely low temperatures.
Yeah, that's a part of my talk I just skipped. I think their argument of very small j over t is just not correct. There isn't any evidence for phase separation at very, very small j over t. We can talk about it later. It's a detail that I think there are problems with it. Let me look at one other piece of data at larger j over t. This is just now looking at estimates made of the ground state energy. And here we see what happens if you try to extrapolate through TC with the PDAs. You end up getting the wrong curvature for a range of dopings, roughly from 0 up to about 0.45 or so. And this is unphysical. The curvature of the ground state energy as a function of doping must always be concave upward, or the system is unstable. So this curvature cannot happen, and what must happen here is, by Maxwell construction, ground state energy is a linear interpolation between two densities. Now, this same sort of argument shows up in these Green's function Monte Carlo calculations. The difference there is that they're always looking at zero temperature, and they get the wrong curvature because they've imposed a fixed uniform density on their clusters to estimate the ground state energy. Here, what we have is that we're coming down in temperature on effectively an infinite lattice. So this isn't a cluster size effect. It's going through TC. If I were to try to extrapolate, where's the best place to draw this? Over here, maybe. If I were to try and extrapolate through a TC with the free energy, I would have fine behavior in the free energy down to some temperature. If this were TC here, so what must happen at this point is that I get a different function, right? It's a phase transition. But the function must be such that it maintains this downward curvature of the free energy. So the true function must do something like this, whereas my estimate would go high if I were to just try and extrapolate it through there. So that's what's happening here. In this region, I'm estimating the ground state energy to be too high because there's a phase transition that actually makes it a bit lower. Okay? So what this shows is that there is a non-zero TC, at least at this parameter value, J over T of 2. It's very difficult from this plot to see exactly what TC is.
Can I squeeze a second?
Yeah.
Then you will correct me. It seems that the high temperature expansion is equivalent to the expansion on constant J and T in the limit when this constant goes to zero, but you can still maintain the ratio whatever you want. So the zero temperature result should be correct in that limit when J and T go to zero with the ratio you keep. But then in that case, the size of the system must go to infinity, which you have to simulate.
I don't know if you can quite view it that way. We've just chosen J and the ratio of J over T to be a number.
If you just look at the Hamiltonian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the density matrix you're simulating, right? It's exponent,
mm-hmm.
you have T there in the denominator.
Mm-hmm.
If T goes to infinity and you get that expansion, this is equivalent to J and T. You can keep T constant, but constant J and T become very small, then you can still hold this expansion, right? You can keep the ratio whatever you want.
We haven't done anything to J and T.
No, I understand that. But you are only interested in the ratio of J and T.
Well,
what I'm saying is that the high temperature expansion in the limit of zero temperature must correspond mm-hmm. to the limit when J and T go to zero both.
I don't think so.
No. Temperature down below J and T, that's the point.
Yeah.
The question of extrapolation.
Yeah. What makes a high temperature series go in the first place is that when you start at infinite temperature, all states are equally probable. So you can do the calculation without any approximation of that limit, any approximation on the coupling constant.
Okay. Of course, right, by setting the scale of the temperature, you can go to any number of absolute degrees as low as you want, but that isn't the point. The point is, where can you go in the dimensionless number, say, theta j? You know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't help to make j and t separately.
Well, you can, as you vary the value of j over t in these series and you try to do the extrapolations, what you find is that you reach different minimum absolute temperatures. But in terms of just what was said, it's exactly the problem. There's still an energy scale in the problem, and that sets really how far in temperature you can go reliably.
This is what I was saying, that you're expanding it to be by j, right?
Right. But
right.
But the expansion
you need a small beta,
right,
which corresponds to a finite temperature to small j.
No.
You expand in beta j, but you're trying to get to large values of beta j by doing the extrapolation.
Right.
That's right. That's
right.
But you can still think that you are in the right ballpark.
Yeah,
if your j and t are very small, but the ratio, you are actually in the small.
Yeah,
but in that case, if they're small, you need an infinite system, a very large system to simulate, right? That's what I'm saying. So the result which you might think can be just finite system.
No. The coefficients are calculated for an infinite system. One of these parameters, the reason that we only have the ratio is because we pulled one out as the energy scale.
Mm-hmm.
So we have beta t, for instance, as a dimensionless parameter. So you can move t around, but it really doesn't change anything. Right? Well, this comes to the question of what Tc is. The problem is that Tc is going to be very low. And we can get a handle on what Tc is by playing some tricks. So let me say what that is, and then we can discuss whether we might see this. The tricks one can play are to go to the infinite j over t limit, where you know the system is phase separated. Or you don't really have to go to that limit, but this is a sure place where you know the system is phase separated. In that limit, you know what the ground state energy is for all densities. And what you can say, you can compare the ground state energy at a fixed density to the free energy that you're calculating. And the point is that no matter what happens, your entropy better be bigger than zero. And if the free energy crosses what you know is the true ground state energy at some non-zero temperature, this would have to come back down and give you negative entropy, and that can't happen. So what that means is that the free energy must always be less than or equal to the ground state energy. These two curves can't cross. But clearly here, when I plot them together, they have a tendency to cross at a non-zero temperature. And I would say that that's an indication that you have a non-zero TC. It's a very small temperature, though. It's around a quarter of J. Typically in, say, critical phenomena analysis of series used for critical phenomena analysis, TC is around the size of the coupling constant, or maybe a little bigger. That's a much higher temperature than this. This is a quarter of J. And if we go down to the physical part of the phase diagram, J is smaller than little t. So this becomes a very, very small temperature. And that's why it's hard to see in, like, looking for a pole in a specific heat or something like that. It's just difficult to get down to those temperatures reliably and see the pole.
But even if it's a quarter of J when J over G is infinity, how do you know it will be that size when J is infinity?
Well, there's a bit of philosophy here. I think that it's J that's causing phase separation. So if I make J smaller, if anything, TC is going to get smaller.
You should express temperature in units of J.
Well, here it is. I'm not consistent with that, I agree.
Can I point out two things here?
Sure.
If you're calculating the free energy variation, then you get too high of free energy. So it would cross at higher temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't intercoupling variation from the
one. No, no, this isn't the variational calculus.
Variationally, you would get two kinds of things. From the two, you're doing this in two dimensions, and you have continuous variables.
Mm-hmm.
First intuition is that it should be in the second order of this transition. So
I agree. I agree. But there is one transition that does occur at finite temperature, and that's just a simple lattice gas sort of transition. And my guess is that's what this is. It's no more than that. It's essentially a classical transition. That's my opinion, and this is the evidence we have for that. I think you could try to do that. Yeah, and. I haven't
Shouldn't
done
you
it. Excuse me?
Shouldn't you expect yourself on the technology?
Yeah, certainly. Into phase separation, it should be a first order transition. I mean, the system is either phase separated or it's not. You can't do it a little bit. There's a critical point, though, certainly. Hopefully, this is the TC for the critical point. This TC will also presumably be a function of what the doping is. So it's not like it's a quarter of J at all parameters. I haven't mapped out what this dependence is. This really isn't a surprise, though, because this is the limit that Emery Kivelson and Lin analyzed also and found a non-zero TC. So it's really just more evidence for that. What I believe could be done, though, and I haven't done it yet, is that you could change this value of J over T, move it down to out of the stratosphere and into realistic values. Because as long as you stay above this value of 3.43, the phase separation is between 0 and 1. So you know always what the ground state energy is there, and you can play exactly the same trick. And presumably, when we do this analysis, we'll find that TC moves down. But I don't know how quickly.
No, that's the basic separation at 0 temperature. At the really critical point, it won't be separating 0 and 1.
Right, right. But what we need to know here to do this sort of analysis is we need to know what the ground state energy is. And then I can compare that to the free energy. Clearly, though, this behavior that I saw, J over T of 2, is still indicating that there is a non-zero TC. Remember, I argued that we got this wrong curvature not because of finite size effects, but because we're crossing TC. So there still is a non-zero TC here. It's just very difficult to see what it is from this sort of plot. Okay. Well, I've more than used up my time. I've only covered the first part of what I wanted to say.
Could you tell us in one dimension, you said that there was space separation of large
J. Right.
What about its finite temperature?
No. T equals 0 is the critical point in 1D. And it's only at 0 temperature.
Would you see an indication of this phase separation in your temperature?
Well, there, in 1D...
Can you check it, so to say?
Well, you can do the same sort of analysis. I mean, you can try to estimate the ground state energy ratio like I did earlier on. And presumably it should work even better because you don't have a TC. But I haven't tried that. In 1D, there are many other much better ways to do the calculation.
Yeah, okay, but if they could check your method.
So well, extend this question, what happens in three dimensions?
I don't know.
Series can be done
virtually the
and
same
you would
ease.
Expect to find a TC which would
yes.
be significant.
Yes, I really don't know. Yeah.
You didn't say anything about density emissions for normalization group work in this problem in your summary.
The reason I haven't said anything about that is because I'm not aware that it's been published yet. Steve White does have some nice results on phase separation. But
on the web in the last few weeks.
Did? Has anyone seen it? Well, until that's published, I don't think I should talk about it. But Steve White does have some nice results on this. I'll say that much. So keep your eyes open. Using DMRG on ladders.
His conclusion is similar to what you've heard.
Yeah, actually he supports my results, but I'm not going to say that too loudly. Yeah, the stripes. Yeah.
That's what they call phase separation?
No. The phase separation is really into a high and low density phase on different parts of the ladder. It's really quite nice data. But I think... No, this is all zero temperature.
Right.
It's DMRG.
So could you summarize your results, because you spoke about so many things?
Okay, my results, the key result that I think I find is that the minimum J over T for phase separation is 1.2 in two dimensions for the TJ model. And this means that phase separation is confined to large values of J over T. It's not relevant for smaller values of J over 2 where we really want to use the model.
Does it make things more homogeneous or less homogeneous? If you raise the temperature, what happens to the...
It has to be more homogeneous as you raise the temperature. Yeah.
Wait, when you say this is where we want to use the model...
For high TC.
If you means in reference to the Coupe plates, then you cannot ignore the Coulomb repulsion between these guys.
Well, that's adding...
My question is, how does... No, but how does the answer on your question of phase separation reflect on the real question where there are Coulomb repulsions?
I guess it says that you don't need to worry about it too much. You don't
you
have
no you certainly don't.
Yes. Right. Well, if you do have phase separation at small values of J over T, you're right. The Coulomb repulsion should tend to get rid of this.
Right.
So,
but
again, I haven't done that, so I can't tell you how that goes. I mean, one thing we could do to try and address this is include a V term. A density, nearest neighbor density. Yeah. Well, but it would tell you something. No, it's not perfect.
What is the new physics is long range interaction.
Right.
Long range interaction can get rid of by introducing stripes.
Sure, sure. No. But
your main result is actually existence of this critical point about 1.2 for
right.
T.
Yeah. Right.
In this connection, once again, just to check whether this is a real situation or maybe kind of artifact of your method you use. Can you really do the same kind of calculations for 1D when we know that there is none, and maybe you will still obtain mm-hmm. this critical value?
No. It's very different in 1D. Well, there is a critical value, but it's very different. The slope of the line is the opposite direction, and it's at much larger values of J over T, actually.
What will you obtain really in your method? Would you use this?
Okay, this is something we did 7 years ago when we first came up with 1.2. We did do the 1D thing, and we compared it to what people had done using exact diagonalization, and we found a very similar line. It's not exactly the same, but it's very similar. Yeah.
Pair bonding. You said you can't use that as a criterion, but could you, is it fair to say it's necessary for pair of poles?
Well, what you would expect is kind of a cascade of things. You would expect first the holes to bind in pairs, and then maybe into quadruplets, and then larger clumps or something. How this goes in your half filling is not well known. The data that has been found is certainly says pairs and maybe things of four holes before you get phase separation. At lower electron filling, near zero, the bottom of the phase diagram, this is much better controlled and much better understood. And the work by Helberg and Manosakis clearly shows that you get binding of electrons, you get pairs of electrons to bind, but you get phase separation before you get four guys to join together. So that's there the answer can be given exactly. But near half filling, it's much harder.
Nearly all the studies show that pairs become unbound at some point, so there's no possibility for phase separation.
I would think so, yeah. I would agree with that.
Would you say, oh, sorry.
Oops, sorry.
Does it matter that the J is positive? Could you do for an ferromagnetism?
We could certainly, with the series we have, change the sign on J.
But surely it wouldn't phase separate
then, right? No, it would do something else. I don't know exactly why, but it would do something else.
Phase separation is essentially an anti-ferromagnetic.
I think it's all from the large J, though.
The poles in a ferromagnetic J, it would like to be even more ferromagnetic.
Yeah, so yeah.
I think it's very comfortable.
My opinion on this is that it's large J physics. But let me just warn you that there's a spectrum of opinion on this where some people believe it still has something to do with smaller values of J over T. I don't believe that, but there are people that do.
I don't know. So is there a way on the charge correlation function, how they fit in your picture? Or
yes, that's the part of the talk I didn't get to.
how much more information is contained in these?
Well, let me put one plot up, and then we can just talk about one plot. Okay, this is the charge-charge correlation sitting at a density of 20% doping, a J over T of 0.4, so I'm well outside of the phase-separated region, and it's at a temperature of 0.2 J. So this is a fairly low temperature. This is a plot throughout the Brillouin zone of this density-density correlation function. Notice, first of all, that it's very suppressed. The largest magnitude here is 0.2. And if you go and look at your tight binding correlation functions, you'll see they're much larger than that. The reason for this suppression in the magnitude is simply the on-site infinite repulsion. That's accounting for this overall magnitude completely. What's more interesting about this is the shape of this function and where the values of Q where you see the fall off into the central kind of cone area. These values of Q, where that happens, actually are very close to what you would find from a spinless fermion or a hardcore boson model. And that's, I think, quite interesting. But that's a topic I don't want to get off onto right here. What I want to direct your attention to are these little dips out at large wave vectors. It took me a long time to believe that these were real effects, because they're so small. I thought I might be seeing some error in the series or some finite temperature effect or something like that. It's only over this last summer that I've convinced myself that they're real. What these little dips represent is a tendency in the TJ model for this set of parameters to have the holes next neighbor or next nearest neighbor slightly larger tendency than in spinless fermions. Okay, if you want, the dips in Q space would correspond to an enhancement in real space. Okay, and I would say that this is exactly what we want to have happen if you want this model to have superconductivity. If this function were really completely flat out here at large wave vectors, there would be no tendency for the holes to come together at all, just like spinless fermions. You just have Fermi statistics. Here, there's a slightly larger tendency for the holes to be together. And what's interesting, it took me a long time also to believe that this was a significant effect.
So this is
pi zero, and this is pi pi. Yeah, the biggest dip is at pi zero.
Yeah.
But there's also a smaller one at pi pi. The question of whether or not this is significant is kind of a tough question to answer, but one way I thought of doing it is to compare my results to hardcore bosons. Why hardcore bosons? Well, they have exactly the same infinite on-site repulsion, but we know that they go superconducting. So that makes for an interesting comparison. The black line here, this is now sitting at pi pi, so I'm looking at one of these dips. The black line here is spinless fermions, and you see it goes nicely flat at 0.2, just as it should. The blue line here is TJ model, and this is the dip that I was talking about. And the red data points, which have the enormous error bars down here, are the hardcore bosons, which we've also calculated by high temperature series. The hardcore bosons are harder to do by high temperature series because I only have the even powers, so I have much less data than I do for the...
another calculation by, I think, Zotos. Also show correlation
mm-hmm.
exactly like hardcore
bosons. Okay. Well, what I'm saying, they're not exactly hardcore bosons, but they're going in the same direction. And what's more important is that the difference from spinless fermions is a significant fraction of the direction towards hardcore bosons.
But if I took that very seriously, then this would be an anisotropic S-wave superconductor. Is that correct?
Mm, I don't know.
Both have pi pi and the pi zero.
Well, there's...
No, this is pi pi.
This is pi pi.
Not pi zero?
No, it's larger, though, at pi zero.
Yeah, okay, that would make it anisotropic this way.
Yeah. What we have to remember here, though, is that we still have the spins to deal with. This is only looking at the charge degrees of freedom. So, one thing that's interesting about this curve is where this effect kicks in temperature. It's really starting at a very high temperature of around 1.5 J. This is not something coming from the spin degrees of freedom directly, the interactions between the spins. It's coming from the fact that you have two species of spins and the kinetic energy. And well, obviously the infinite repulsion is doing this. But the spin stuff won't really start doing anything until you get down below J. Well, J is right around here. And so you have to get, by the time you get to where the spins are doing something, the charges have already done their major thing. Now, how all of this combines to give you superconductivity, I haven't a clue. But it seems to me that the charges are at least going in the right direction. So, okay. That's a short version of what I was.